Okay, said Tony, hovering at Jan's shoulder. We're going to need to be very careful.
Right. Jan put her hands on her hips and looked down at the zoo, laid out empty and silent beneath them.
He's very dangerous.
Okay.
He's incredibly strong, but he's not very fast, and he's fierce.
He's petting a horse.
What?
I found him. He's petting a horse. She pointed.
A horse,
Tony repeated, staring down the line of her finger. The Hulk was, indeed, standing in a grassy enclosure which appeared to be a petting zoo. Bunnies were hopping around his feet, and he was gently petting a large brown horse, which didn't seem at all afraid of him.
Okay, he doesn't seem so violent right now. Do you want to try talking to him?
Sure. Jan stepped over the row of trees next to them, skirted the snake house, and approached the paddock. Tony swooped down and landed to approach the fence as Jan put her feet down with great care, rabbits hopping away from her.
Hello, she said, and Hulk scowled at her.
The horse was calm under the big green hands.
What giant lady want?
Hulk said forbiddingly.
I wanted to pet the horse, she tried, and Hulk visibly brightened.
Horse is Hulk's friend.
He stroked its mane down.
Horse doesn't shout at Hulk. Giant lady is too big to pet, though. She will frighten horse.
Jan shrunk to normal girl size, and Hulk nodded approval, apparently unconcerned by size-changing women. She stroked the horse's nose, and it whiffled at her hair. Hulk smiled, revealing big white slabs of teeth.
Horse leg, giant lady.
And then he caught sight of Tony standing at the fence and frowned terribly.
Hulk crushed Tin Man.
He bunched a fist and waved it at Tony.
No, no. Jan put her hand on his shoulder. Iron Man is my friend, and he likes horses too, don't you?
Love them, said Tony. Beautiful creatures. Very, ergonomic.
Tin Man attack Hulk,
Hulk insisted.
Hulk smash.
The horse tossed its head, and Jan tried to pat it and Hulk back to calmness.
He's not. Look. He's just standing there. You're making the horse upset, Hulk.
She assumed an exaggerated sad face, and the Hulk ducked his head and shuffled his feet.
Hulk is sorry.
He patted the horse again, and it nudged him with its nose. He looked back at Tony through narrowed eyes.
Tin Man not fight Hulk?
Not at all, said Tony. We'd like to be Hulk's friends.
Hulk scrunched up his face and continued to pet the horse.
Hulk would like more friends,
he said finally.
People run away from Hulk and shout at him and hit him.
Why don't you come to tea with us? Jan smiled at him and held out her hand. Back at the tower.
The tower?
Tony pictured the damage Hulk could do to all the ridiculously expensive equipment in the tower, and all the employees he'd terrify.
Yes, because it's so nice and close, Jan continued, making an apologetic face at him. Do you remember the tower, Hulk?
Hulk frowned. It wasn't really clear how much Hulk remembered about Banner's life, although apparently Banner could recall most of what Hulk did.
Anyway, you can come and meet Morgan Stark and Captain America, and we can eat. I'm kind of hungry, aren't you?
Hulk could eat,
conceded Hulk, and let Jan take his hand, or place her hand in his huge palm, and lead him towards the fence. Jan started to climb the fence, and Hulk wrapped his big hand around her waist. She let out a squeak. Tony tensed.
"Hulk, help,"
said Hulk, and hopped the fence neatly, holding her steady. Then he looked suspiciously at Tony.
"Giant lady, sure?"
She petted his hand, looking a little nervous.
"Of course, Hulk. It'll be fine. Put me down?"
"Yeah, bub," came a voice from above, and as Hulk looked about in bewilderment, Tony looked up to see Wolverine dangling from Storm's arm. "Put her down, or it's the worst for you."
"No, no, no!"
Tony waved his hands frantically, but Wolverine was already dropping out of the sky, gleaming claws extended. Jan shrieked. Hulk jumped. There was a wet crunching sound as Wolverine hit the ground. He'd heal, though. Tony looked around wildly for Hulk, who had vanished. "They're over by the monkey house." Storm rose higher in a swirl of wind. "Should I..."
"No! Is giant girl all right?"
"She seems fine." That was lucky. Getting their new recruit squashed by another new recruit would have been very bad press. Now, if they could just coax Hulk without further disaster...
"I'm gonna slice him up," said Wolverine dizzily, scrambling to his feet.
He grabbed Tony's arm for balance and almost tripped them both over with his weight.
"Wolverine, you idiot! He's on our team! Sort of."
Tony pushed him back onto his feet and held him in place until his eyes focused. "He's kidnapped the girl."
"No, he was helping..." "Never mind. Stay there a minute."
Tony jetted up next to Storm, wobbling in the winds, keeping her aloft. Hulk was wandering down one of the broad paths, carrying Giant Girl, who was patting his shoulder and talking animatedly. She looked up and waved at them.
"Okay, she's..."
He looks down.
"Oh God, where'd Wolverine go?"
There was a nasty crunching sound from the Hulk's direction, and Wolverine flew past them. He landed in one of the enclosures, sending up a puff of reddish dirt.
"Ah, who is that green person?" said Storm. "He's called the Hulk. He's... okay, it's complicated. But he's on our side. Or he's supposed to be. If we stop attacking him, is Wolverine going to be all right?"
"He'll be fine." It was hard to tell with her opaque white eyes, but he thought she was embarrassed. "I'm sorry about this. We stopped by the tower and were told you were here. And when we got here..."
"This is a mess."
Tony glanced back and forth.
"We have to get the Hulk out of here without destroying anything."
"If you fetch Wolverine, I will get the Hulk."
"Great. Try to keep him calm. He was quite friendly with Giant Girl."
"Of course." She gusted down towards them, and Tony dived after Wolverine, coming to a stop above him. He was lying in a large dark patch Tony could only assume was blood, but he was already sitting up, rubbing his head. Those were impressive healing powers. If only all his attacks didn't seem to involve getting seriously injured, he'd be very useful.
"Get out of there, Wolverine. You're disturbing the animals."
Two sandy kangaroos were regarding him with their dead black eyes, like sharks. "Where'd he go? I'll get him." He started to stand up and groaned as his leg gave way.
"No getting him," said Tony,
and Wolverine bared his teeth and scrambled up again.
"You can stay in there then." "No, I didn't mean it. Get out of there before a leopard chokes on you or something."
"Fine." He stumbled off towards the high fence. Tony landed on the other side and tapped one metal boot pointedly.
Then it occurred to him that Wolverine must weigh far too much to climb the fence without damaging it, and he was going to have to airlift him over the fence. "Excuse me," said a strange voice, and he turned to see several men dressed in overalls. "Is it safe yet?"
Not quite.
Zoo staff, presumably.
"Hey, do you have keys? Could you let him out?"
"Oh, sure," said the guy. He dug in his pocket and pulled out a handful of junk. Hold this for a moment. Tony took a mobile phone, a Snickers, and some keys, and waited as the guys ticked through the keys. "Okay," said the guy.
"What?"
Tony heard a clicking noise from his palm. He looked down, and that small black key ring flashed a red LED at him.
"What?"
Electricity sparked, and Tony closed his fist, the armor giving a warning beep, and then settled back into the smooth, low hum of power.
"So, when I find out about a way to shut down the armor, a workaround's pretty high priority,"
he said in conversational tones, and the other guy made a face. "That was yesterday."
"So?"
Tony lifted his hand, turning the palm towards them.
"We going to do this?"
"I think we are," and the guy smiled at him. Then his smile widened too far, flesh peeling back from raw pink gums and yellow fangs like something out of a horror movie. And Tony took a fast step back. "Our master demands your presence, and we obey." He lunged, and Tony fired the repulsors and launched into the air as it went tumbling back. There was a sound like chattering teeth magnified 1,000-fold, and he glanced back to see 5 creatures like great fleshy bats in pursuit. He tumbled and fired the repulsors, and the one he hit lurched and screeched and caught its wing on another and turned on it, hissing. They plummeted, clawing at each other, and Tony gunned his boot jets to gain height away from the other 3. The screeching was deafening. Tony could hear the animals in the zoo panicking, roaring and howling. And he could lead them away, but... something yanked at his ankle, and he cursed and kicked out at the creature, which sent him into a spin. He cut the power entirely and fell into it. It clawed at his armor as they dropped, leaving gouges but not breaking through, and Tony punched it as hard as he could in the jaw. Its head snapped back, teeth clicking together, and its grip loosened enough for Tony to twist free and fire the jet boots directly into its gut, sending it down into the polar bear enclosure, he thought. 2 more, and 2 became 1 when Giant Girl grabbed hold of one and brought it up close to her face. "What are," she began, and then squeaked and threw it away, a blob of blood the size of a basketball flying after it. "It bit me," she said. "What are they?"
"I don't know."
It looped round and came after Tony again, and he dived down toward the earth fast, pulling up and away at the last second. It hit the ground, sending up a spray of gravel. Giant Girl put her foot on it, and there was a sound like muffled firework. She lifted her foot to reveal a scorched circle. "Are they magic?"
"Must be."
Tony looked about.
"Where's the..."
"Ack!" Giant Girl slapped at the air as another one of them dived in towards her face. "Ow! Get it!" She grabbed at the air, but it was too agile.
"Shrink!"
called Tony, and she shrank. It followed her down, and she ran towards Tony, who was lining up his repulsors when the world lurched and spun, and he hit something squishy with crunching force. There was scorching smell and an explosion. He said, and flailed out a hand. He was lying on his stomach in the middle of a scorch mark.
"Storm, was that?"
It was the Hulk, said Jan, running to his side to offer him a hand up. He waved it away. At normal size, he'd just yank her over. He threw you at the thing. Are there more of them?
Hulk does not like giant birds.
Hulk scanned the sky suspiciously.
There's, I don't know, there were five. That was two.
One exploded when a polar bear bit it, said Storm, appearing with a handful of ice cream cones. Hulk made a happy noise and took them from her. What are those beasts, Iron Man?
I don't know, said Tony.
There! Jan pointed upwards. The last two circled overhead, looking down at them. Storm frowned and then raised a hand, and there was a sudden feeling of heaviness in the air. The two monsters hissed down at them and then popped out of existence like soap bubbles.
Did you do that? Said Tony, and she shook her head.
They must have decided the odds were against them.
Yeah, well.
Tony stared up at the empty sky. Doom was a sorcerer. He knew that. But somehow, sending weird sorcerous things after him didn't seem fair. Where's Wolverine? Jan asked.
Last seen in the kangaroo cage.
And hopefully he hadn't killed anything endangered.
Let's walk.
Hulk permitted himself to be led back down the path, and Tony grinned as he heard a familiar voice. I was absolutely clear about the no-clawing living creatures rule, Logan. Don't even try to. It was just a koala, snapped Wolverine. And koalas are alive and will remain so. Do I make myself clear? Did Wolverine kill a koala? Said Jan in horror, and Cap looked up and smiled. No, it seemed to be winning when I was just gonna... No, you weren't, Logan, because...
Hulk smash Harry Man?
Hulk took a step towards him, and Jan and Storm grabbed his arms. No, no, Jan said. He's a friend. Logan is our ally, Hulk. Hulk made a face that may have meant doubt, or maybe disgust.
Hulk hungry,
he announced. Then let us return to the tower. Storm tugged gently, and he shambled off down the path between her and Jan, Wolverine trailing in their wake. Steve let out an exasperated breath, and then smiled at Tony. What happened? They fell into step together, out of earshot of the others. I saw you on the news.
Some kind of weird demon infestation.
Tony shrugged at Steve's raised eyebrow.
Maybe not a demon. I'm not an expert. We took care of it. Hulk helped.
I thought you came here after Hulk.
We did, but he was just here for the petting zoo. But I think we can give the impression Hulk came here to fight the demon-y things in a heroic fashion.
Steve looked doubtful. That's not entirely...
It's not like he was doing any harm, and he did destroy one of them. I'm sure the zoo management will feel better knowing they have evacuated the zoo for demons, and not just a man who wanted to hold a bunny.
I suppose so. They exited the zoo. Ahead of them, Storm was talking earnestly to a policeman, gesturing towards the sky. Hulk stood placid behind her, Jan's hand in his. So why would demons...
No idea.
Okay, well, do you have to go back to work? Steve said, and Tony shook his head. After we finish here and get the Hulk settled, I'd like to spend some time with you,
debriefing,
said Tony blandly, and Steve grinned. Something like that, he said. Hulk liked the tower and Tony's office. He pulled down the plywood over the windows
and peered over the balcony, and crammed himself into the bathroom to flush the toilet a few times. They finally got him settled down with a large stack of cookies and milk, and Jan telling a story. And then Steve made unsettled faces at Tony until he muttered an excuse and made for the door. He should probably have gone to the workshop to take off his armor. But Steve knew now it didn't matter. And Steve just grinned when he came into the bedroom to find him struggling out of the armor. Grinned and kissed him. And Tony grabbed Steve's head with his gauntleted hands and kissed back, hard. Oh! Steve sounded surprised. Oh! And his hand skimmed down over the shoulder plates, over the thin undershirt, tracing around the arc reactor. Iron Man, he said softly, and then laughed. This is strange. But you like it? Steve's short, shivery breaths. His dark eyes were very clear on the subject. And when Tony rubbed the metal back of the gauntlet over the front of Steve's pants, he let out a high-pitched gasp. Tony fumbled with a zipper and got his hand inside, and Steve squeaked and pulled away. Cold, he said, and Tony laughed. He pushed his hand up under the red and white leather, spreading them over Steve's belly as he twitched and grumbled. Warm them up for me. Steve wrinkled his nose. You aren't going to take the armor off? You do it, baby. And he batted his eyelashes extravagantly to make Steve laugh. Steve's hands fumbled over the catches and locks, the intricate fittings around his hip joints and groin, and Tony dragged his fingers downwards again, making Steve squirm. This time, when he closed his metal fingers around Steve, he didn't pull away. He pressed closer and breathed hard against Tony's neck. Tony stroked him carefully, listening to his breaths get louder, more ragged. And finally, Steve undid the last catch and eased the hip plates free. Tony obligingly lifted a leg so Steve could pull it away without pinching any delicate areas. And Steve let it drop to the floor before grabbing Tony's ass and lifting him off his feet. Whoa, said Tony, letting go of Steve's dick to grab onto his shoulders. And Steve carried him to the bed and tumbled them both down. The bed creaked under their weight, but held. Tony went in for a kiss, but Steve pulled away, hands going to his pants. Let me just take... No, you don't, Tony said, grabbing his hands and pulling him back. You leave it on. And Steve giggled at him. And okay, this was pretty funny, especially when Steve gave up trying to ease Tony's panties down over the armor and just tore them free. Tony almost cackled with glee. I'll buy you new ones, Steve promised, scrabbling in the nightstand for a condom. And then he fitted himself against Tony and slid inside. And the scale scraped against his gauntlets, leather rubbing against the insides of his thighs above the leg plates. He dreamed of having Steve, cap like this. He dragged off one of the gauntlets and threw it aside, ran his hands over the smooth blue leather, and urged him closer until their lips brushed with every thrust, Steve's half-shut eyes gazing down into his. Tony, he muttered roughly. Oh, God! Tony! Yes! He caught himself on his elbow, keeping most of his weight up, and pressed his face into Tony's hair. I love you, he mumbled, and Tony stilled. Ugh, was all he could manage, and Steve nuzzled into his throat. It's okay, he murmured. I know it's soon. Don't mind me. I just do. No, I... Tony choked to a stop. He was going to turn back. He was going to. Okay then, he said, and felt Steve smile against his throat, like that was any kind of reasonable response. He almost ignored the soft chime of his cell phone, but Steve lifted his head sleepily and peered toward the noise, and Tony decided answering it might be quicker than discussing not answering it.
"It's Richards,"
came over the phone, almost drowned out by the hum of machinery.
"I need you to come here. There's a molecular instability that could lead to catastrophic deconstruction. I was a fool not to see it before. My incompetence and overconfidence."
"Don't beat yourself up, Reed," Tony muffled a yawn. "Catastrophic deconstruction? That sounded pretty bad. Was he going to blow up?" Maybe it had been a delayed action explosive ray, and Doom was just waiting for him to blow up. Tony swung his legs out of the bed and groped on the floor for his jeans. An arm snuck around his waist, and Steve nuzzled into his side.
"Very serious," said Reed,
and Tony made a noise of distracted agreement, trying to wriggle out of Steve's grip without waking him up all the way.
"Come to me."
"Baxter Building?"
"I'm at one of my secondary laboratories."
He was drowned out by a crunching noise. Tony could just make out the address. "On my way," he said, and tossed the phone down and peeled Steve's arm off. "Mm-hmm." Steve tried again to gather him back into the bed. "Gotta go do a thing." Tony tried to push him away, but he was grabby. "Go back to sleep. Science calls." "You want me to?" "No, no, stay put." He pushed Steve firmly back down onto the bed and kissed him and watched his eyes drop shut. "Go back to sleep. I won't be long." Unless he came back a guy. Or catastrophically deconstructed. Steve nuzzled into his neck. "Mmm," Steve said, and managed to get a solid grip on Tony's butt, while Tony was distracted by the nuzzling. "Who was that?" "Just Reed," Tony said, and kissed him again. "Science stuff. I should..." Steve's grip tightened, just enough to indicate that he wasn't going anywhere very soon. Crawling out of a nice, comfy bed with his own personal super soldier was never a great idea, but flying over the city almost made up for it. He'd have to take Steve flying at night sometime, maybe the 4th of July, and they could watch the fireworks from the sky. Assuming he and Steve were still speaking by the 4th, that was. He pushed the thought away and dived down towards the warehouse. Brightly lit, well-maintained, it could be any one of 1,000 warehouses. Tony was pretty sure he owned some of his own down here. This one had a little plaque by the main door that read Richards and a little buzzer. Tony pushed the buzzer, and it crackled at him.
"It's Tony," he said. "Reed?"
"Good evening, Mr. Stark,"
said an unfamiliar voice, a certain metallic tinge to it, a robot maybe, or distortion from the intercom.
"Dr. Richards is in the center of the building by the large tank."
The lock clicked, and Tony put his hand to the door. The stink of sulfur assailed him, and he wrinkled his nose. Cavernous and filled with boxes, lit with not enough fluorescent lights. He padded in further, slowly, saw the spindly shadow that had to be Reed, and followed it. "Huh. Some kind of robot, with telescopic arms, some strange machinery behind it."
"Reed? Where are you?"
He heard a muffled voice and stepped towards it. Nothing there, just another passageway of grumbling engines. The smell of sulfur was making him lightheaded. He should adjust the air filters in the helmet. He should... He staggered slightly. He should really...
Tony woke up to itchy eyes and a sore throat. For a sleepy moment, he thought he'd fallen asleep on a business trip. But then he realized his arms were tied above his head. That wasn't totally unheard of on his private jet, but this was not his jet. The interior was darker than the sleek, bright lines Tony favored. The shapes not graceful, but blocky and utilitarian. He looked around suspiciously, and then down at himself. He was in his underwear, panties, and tank top, which was never a good sign. And the armored figure uncurling from the pilot seat was a very bad sign indeed.
"Doom," he said.
"What? Let me go." He struggled against the shackles on his wrists. There was already a faint ache building in his shoulders, so he'd been there a while. And Doom stared down at him. Tony pulled up his knees to his chest and glared. Kicking Doom in the groin wasn't likely to help, but you never knew. Armoring the groin was a delicate balance between mobility and protection, and Doom wore a tunic over his armor, which Tony had long suspected was to hide torso armor inferior to the Iron Man. Doom turned aside and took a folded piece of cloth from a cabinet. Tony eyed it suspiciously, but it seemed to be nothing more than a blanket, which Doom placed over Tony's lap, tucking it into the lap belt, armored hands avoiding contact with Tony.
"How did you get me out of the warehouse?" he blurted.
"There is a tunnel."
Tony groaned. Of course Doom had tunnels.
"I regret the necessity of your state of dress," Doom continued. "Given your ingenuity, I believed it wise to remove any possible tools from your person. This will have to suffice until we reach Latveria."
"Latveria?"
Tony turned his head, peering about him. The plane was certainly big enough to cross the Atlantic, and to get them all the way to Eastern Europe without stopping to refuel. The sky he could see through the windscreen looked like early morning light, and he'd been at the warehouse not long after 1 in the morning, so either he'd been out quite a few hours, or they'd flown across enough time zones to meet the dawn. Neither option seemed good. The only humans in evidence were himself and Doom, and maybe the co-pilot, but squinting over his shoulder, he could see robots standing at attention in their racks. Maybe 30. And 30 of Doom's personal entourage robots would be a real struggle, even in his armor. Doom had to have brought the armor. He wouldn't have been able to resist snooping through Tony's latest innovations. But where was it? "You will enjoy Latveria," Doom assured him, and Tony tried to twist his head further. Was that the briefcase with his armor in, tucked onto a shelf? He breathed a sigh of relief and turned his attention back to Doom, who was still rambling on. "It is a beautiful and prosperous country, and you will have the best of it. Everything will be the finest. You will have servants and jewels and..."
"Can I just ask?" said Tony, wondering what Doom expected him to do with jewels.
"Yes?" Tony turned back and looked up at him. It was hard to read expression through the iron mask, but Doom's blue-green eyes were not narrowed or widened, and there was no sign of a frown. He was gazing down with every sign of courteous attention.
"Why did you turn me into a woman?"
"To be my queen," said Doom, in a duh tone. "It is more fitting you be a woman, and of course, in time, I will require an heir." Tony stared at him, waiting for him to say something that would make the situation less bizarre. But Doom was apparently done.
You what?"
Tony's voice wavered and died away.
"An heir? Was that empty ache in his gut fear, or his uterus attempting to shrivel up and die? Queen?"
"My queen," and Doom's voice had an edge of impatience. You are to wed me and be Queen of Latveria." He didn't seem to be joking.
"One of us," said Tony with deep conviction, "has gone insane."
"You are eminently suitable now you are a woman." Doom spoke as if nothing out of the ordinary was occurring, as if he regularly gave people forcible sex changes and married them. Maybe he did. Maybe he was a Bluebeard. Tony tried to stop the lurid progression of his thoughts.
"You are lovely enough to wear a crown. I had my doubts, but you are entirely fitting. Once I had been assured of your beauty, and that the transformation was stable, I ordered you brought to me. I should have expected that I would need to attend to the matter personally." His eyes narrowed in a frown. "You just can't get the stuff these days," he muttered to himself.
Tony stopped.
Doom, I am not marrying you. You may call me Victor.
He thought Doom was smiling at him. "I have already had rooms prepared for you in the castle, as fine as can be managed with the necessary security concerns. In time, you may have more freedom, but for now, you must be confined." He fiddled with the wrist joint of his gauntlet and pulled it free. There was a black glove under it, silky against Tony's skin when it cupped his chin.
"This is the most skeeved out I have ever been," said Tony firmly, and Doom's fingers trailed up his cheek.
"You have beautiful hair," Doom murmured, "and very striking eyes. Yes, you will be very suitable. With your will, your genius to stand with mine, Latveria."
"No," Tony snarled, and Doom's eyes narrowed. "I'm not going to marry you. I'm not even going to say a woman. I'm getting changed back."
"You cannot change back." Doom folded his arms and glared. The mask gave good glare, Tony had to admit, but he'd seen worse.
"Yes, I..."
"The change is irreversible." He spoke with calm certainty, and Tony's stomach swooped. "Your previous body does not exist anymore. It has been overwritten, like data on a drive."
"What? No," said Tony. "That doesn't..."
He choked off, but Reed said. Because bringing up Reed was never a good tactic with Doom.
"It took me a long time to identify a universe close enough to have a Tony Stark so similar." He tapped a glove forefinger on the arc reactor.
"And yet so different." The finger touched Tony's lower lip, and he jerked his head away, and then took a half-hearted snap at it. It wasn't like biting Doom's finger was going to help, but appearances had to be maintained.
"You don't..."
"Your own body was replaced with the information from this one, destroying it," Doom said insistently. "The only way to alter it is to copy another body onto it."
"So I could..." Tony tried again, but Doom's voice drowned out his breathless protest. He felt dizzy, like he was about to faint, which he wasn't going to do because he wasn't a girl.
"Even if there is another Anthony Edward Stark out there, one close enough to be mistaken for you, it will take years, decades, to find him in the infinity of the multiverse. No, you will remain a woman, and for a woman, what greater honor than to be Doom's bride?" The plane shook and jolted. For a second, Tony thought that Giant Girl had come to the rescue again. But no. They had to be over the ocean by now, many miles from Jan. He shut his eyes and tried to work out what would happen when they'd realize he'd been kidnapped again. Was he really going to stay a woman forever? The plane dropped, hard, and then listed alarmingly. Tony blinked his eyes open. Doom grabbed the back of his chair to maintain his balance and turned his head towards the co-pilot.
Are you experiencing difficulties?
The co-pilot, apparently a human, cast an alarmed look back.
Forgive me, Your Highness. There is a storm blowing up.
Clear skies were predicted, said Doom flatly,
and Tony felt a stirring of hope. Could Storm have ridden out here on the winds? Although what could she do by herself?
He turned his hands and explored the manacles as Doom took over the controls of the plane. Without tools, of course, he was largely helpless.
He saw a flicker of lightning through the windscreen, and Doom hissed, metal-clad hands clacking on the controls. Tony began to count as he probed at the lock. It felt like a standard enough lock, nothing fancy, but he needed a tool, a pin, something.
6 seconds, and there was a growl of thunder. Tony looked up to the anchor point. The chain ran through a metal loop riveted to the roof of the plane. Nothing there. The plane was heaving now, like a restless horse. Manageable with a decent pilot. And Doom was an excellent pilot. There was a faint rattling noise. It took him a moment to realize it was rain. It was getting dark inside the plane, only the colored lights of the dashboard providing illumination. He craned his neck to peer at the floor. There had to be something. There was nothing. The plane lurched and then dropped sickeningly. The co-pilot made a choked sound, and Doom barked out an order in a language Tony thought was Hungarian. The angle of the plane changed. They were losing altitude. Was it deliberate? No harm in asking.
What's happening? He called, and Doom half turned his head.
The weather is forcing us down. There's no cause for concern.
Right. On the ground was an improvement on in the air, and stopped was better than moving towards Latveria.
We are over land, right?
Yes, said Doom, some irritation shading his voice. We will land and wait out the storm.
Wonderful.
Tony tugged at the shackles. Nothing yielded. The winds lulled as they landed. Surely it had to be storm. Maybe they'd borrowed the Fantastijet? Maybe...
What's that?
The co-pilot was pointing out the window. Doom stood up and leaned forward to look.
Something is on the hull.
He turned to look at Tony, who glared back. There was a thump on the hull, towards the rear, and then another thump over Tony's head.
Multiple somethings, said Tony breezily. Maybe it's rabbits.
Silence.
Doom stared at him, as if suspecting Tony of causing the noises. Tony smiled at him.
That's no way to charm a lady.
Doom stalked past him to the door.
Hey, can you unchain me? My arms are getting sore.
No, said Doom, and spoke in Hungarian, presumably to the robots, as they stood in clanking unison. I will deal with this, Stark, and then we will resume our journey. Do not think of this as an opportunity to escape.
He opened the door, and the robots marched out. By the crackling sounds that followed, there was definitely something out there. A force field shimmered in place around Doom's body, and he followed them out. There was silence for a minute. Tony cleared his throat to attract the co-pilot's attention.
So, let me go? He said hopefully, and the co-pilot looked at him as if he was insane.
Tony couldn't really blame him.
Right.
There was a loud noise outside, as if something very heavy had hit the earth.
Hulk smash!
Came a familiar voice, and Tony grinned at the co-pilot, who looked puzzled.
One day, people were going to learn to fear those words. For now, he just had to hope Doom didn't have any anti-gamma ray about his person. There were sounds of rending metal, and Hulk bellowing, and the crackle of lightning. And he could hear Jan's voice shriek, "Ew! What is that?" And the high whine of energy bolts that would burn through flesh and bone. In fact, he could smell charred flesh, and he was going to assume for his peace of mind that it was Wolverine. There was the sound of someone impacting solidly with the floor. A familiar shining shape decked the co-pilot, and Tony sighed with relief as the shield bounced back past him. "Tony," said an urgent voice, and Steve's mouth grazed his cheekbone for a second before he was tugging at the manacles, eyes narrowed. "Pin, wire, something," Tony ordered, and Steve glanced around wildly. After long seconds, he lunged and grabbed the pilot's headset, and snapped and twisted before putting a thin strip of metal into Tony's hands. "Now get my armor! The briefcase!" He worked at the shackles, and by the time he had them unlocked, the briefcase was on the chair next to him, and Steve was sitting in the pilot seat, flicking switches. "It's locked or something," Steve said, and Tony grabbed the mini toolkit he kept in the briefcase and dived for the front of the console. "What are we doing exactly?" He levered the front panel off, and Steve grinned down at him. "Doom's after you, right? If he sees you escaping..." "Good call." Tony assessed the interior of the console. "All right, get rid of the co-pilot and close the door. I got this." There was a muffled thud, and then Steve settled back into the chair. Tony wired and clipped and sat back on his heels. "Try it now." And under Steve's hands, the plane lurched into the air. "Can you actually fly one of these?" "I am flying one of these." Tony scrambled to his feet to take over the controls, which meant sitting down in Steve's lap. The sky lightened as they rose, storm's work, presumably. "Nice plane," Tony remarked as they leveled out, and Steve squeezed him. "Not as fast as the Quinjet," he said, and put his face close to Tony's. They were flying clear now, and Tony was just about to kiss him when his words sank in. "You came here in the Quinjet? It's not finished!" "What else were we supposed to do? How did Doom even get you out of that warehouse? We waited for almost an hour before realizing something was wrong." "Really? It was lucky that Steve's hearing was good enough to identify Reed's voice over the phone. Although they should probably have a talk about eavesdropping on private telephone calls at some point. As cunning ambushes went, though, they'd failed almost totally." "Tunnels," Steve groaned. "I know! Textbook evil dictator stuff. Lucky he brought the armor along." "I was afraid you'd be out of range before we could follow you." Steve pulled Tony's head down for a kiss. Tony patted him reassuringly. "The tracking device is good for a long way. And anyway, you knew where he was headed. Glad he didn't get to Latverian airspace, though." "If you hadn't said you could cope fine," Steve began severely, and Tony made a rude noise. Because all of us bursting in would have made so much sense. He would have just sat on his diplomatic immunity and... "So did you actually get any useful information?" Steve interrupted. And Tony hesitated. Steve looked at him expectantly. "Well, not anything useful." "Right." Steve's eyes narrowed. "Have I thanked you yet?" said Tony hastily. "Thank you, Steve." And they kissed, slow,
only to be interrupted by a soft beep from the sensors. The Quinjet's on our tail. Can you reach my helmet? He settled it over his head, and Steve smothered a laugh. No doubt he looked quite silly with just the helmet on. Tony ignored him and turned on the voice modifier.
Quinjet One, do you copy?
Hello? Said a male voice. No, I got it. Hi, said a female voice.
Jan. And Tony grinned.
Is that you, Iron Man? I said I got it, said the male voice indignantly. Do you copy Doom's plane?
I copy. Who's flying? And who's that?
Storm is, said Jan. She says we've got the fuel to make it back if the winds are favorable.
And will the winds be favorable?
Tony asked, checking the fuel gauge of whatever this plane was called. Probably something grandiose like invincible or irredeemable, or maybe irritable. Enough fuel to make it back.
I think I can make arrangements,
came Storm's voice.
Let me, said the male voice again. Doom and his robots all broke off after you, and we just all got back in the Quinjet and flew off. So we stuck there in... wherever that was. Over.
Who is that? Tony said.
It's Spider-Man. Captain America said I could come.
Hulk wanted Hulk to the little voice.
Doom's plane out,
said Tony hastily, and threw his helmet onto the co-pilot seat. Where'd you get Spider-Man from? You lurk around warehouses in New York long enough, you're going to get either Daredevil or Spider-Man turning up, said Steve. I figure he'd be useful. He slid his hand up Tony's thigh, and Tony wriggled. I am flying a high-performance aircraft here, mister. It probably wasn't safe to do anything while he was actually flying the plane. Inducting Steve into the Mile High Club would have to wait. You do it very well. Steve brushed a light kiss over his cheek. Are you all right? I'm fine, said Tony. Want a flying lesson? You'll have to sit on my lap, though. There was just room enough for both planes in the grounds. The Quinjet out back and Doom's plane, which had irrevocable painted along the tail, parked on the front lawn. They assembled in the sitting room for breakfast. Jarvis served them bacon sandwiches and coffee, with a side of snide remarks about the state of the lawn. We were so worried. Jan took his gauntleted hand and squeezed it. When the captain telephoned to say you'd been kidnapped, we just all rushed over. Rhodey gave us the jet, Steve said. He wasn't eating, possibly out of sympathy for Tony, who was trapped behind his faceplate with only the smell of bacon and coffee to sustain him. He said it was finished enough. Tony was just futzing over the interiors.
Interiors, my ass! You're lucky you didn't try to fly it through major turbulence. And the landing gear? Well, never mind. You're still alive. It's a good little jet, really. I'll put some pressure on Mr. Stark to finish it up. When he gets back. From Shanghai.
Interiors were important, damn it. No one would take them seriously if they didn't look the part. I can't believe we have our own jet, said Spider-Man happily. For some reason, he'd taken his sandwich and retreated to the ceiling. That is so cool. Our own jet!
So you're on board now, huh?
Tony tipped back his head to examine the webbing all over the ceiling. Was this how living with Spider-Man was going to be? Jarvis wasn't going to like it. Spider-Man did a great job. Steve smiled up at him. You too, giant girl. Yeah? Spider-Man bounced on the end of his web line. Did you see me with the webs and the feet? I did. That was smart thinking.
Hulk helped too,
mumbled Hulk, around half a pig.
Hulk was very useful, Steve said.
Thank you, Hulk.
I found the webs acted as an insulator, said Storm. It was very convenient to have my lightning contained so. Much less risky.
Your timing was excellent, Storm. I'd like for us to get more practice in working together, though. It took us a while to coordinate. That's the kind of thing that working together can result in.
Steve beamed at him, and Wolverine made a rude noise.
So, is Dr. Doom behind all these kidnappings? First he tries to kidnap Miss Stark, then Jan, and now you, Iron Man.
Storm arched her eyebrows at him, and Tony shrugged.
Maybe?
But... Steve started, and then shut his mouth and shook his head when Storm raised her eyebrows.
Nothing.
Well, I doubt we've got two crazy kidnappers after the team,
said Tony lightly.
Got any theories as to why?
Steve was looking troubled, and Tony shrugged.
Hard to say. Mr. Stark has some history with Doom. I'll drop him an email, see what he has to say. Could be Doom is just trying to stop a new super team forming.
Could be.
Steve bit his lip and looked away, then looked back with a smile. Anyway, I think we did well. I think we can do better, but that'll come with time and planning. We should assemble for a more thorough debriefing and analysis. Tomorrow morning?
Sounds good, said Logan. I need a drink.
Okay, said Spider-Man breathlessly. Look, I'm going to trust you guys, okay? We're going to be a team, and I want to be part of the team. He hesitated, and then put his hands up and pulled his mask off, revealing brown hair and brown eyes and a worried but hopeful expression. My name's Peter. I have some real vicious enemies, so please, please don't tell anyone. But I trust you guys. I know you'll take care.
Oh, Peter, said Jan, and she grew 10 feet tall and threw her arms around him. That's so sweet!
I'm glad you felt like you could tell us, Peter, said Cap warmly. We're a team, and that means if anyone comes after you or the people around you, we'll be here to help.
There was a pause, and then it seemed like everyone turned to look at Tony, who took a step back. He could take his helmet off right now. He could be Antonia Stark. What was one more secret identity? Steve was looking at him, calm and kind. And Steve would... He squeezed his eyes shut and blamed female hormones for the prickling behind his eyes.
I have to go, he blurted,
and took 2 steps and blasted out the window. Risky and stupid, and he gouged the frame on the way out. Rhodey and Steve between them seemed to have kept his kidnapping secret from Pepper. She just gave him a fierce look of exasperation when he wandered in, and that could have been for anything. He sat at his desk for a while and then sent her an email and started counting. He was on 27 when she burst through the door.
Are you serious? She said, sounding like she wasn't sure whether to be angry or upset.
I don't know.
Something in his tone stopped her in her tracks. She stared at him and then sat down in the chair in front of his desk.
You want to stay a woman? She said uncertainly.
I just want to know my options, legally, how it would work, if Reed can't change me back. Tony rubbed at the back of his neck. He kept trying to picture himself living life as a woman, managing the company, building the armor, teasing Rhodey, kissing Steve. And whenever he pictured himself, he saw the broad shoulders and the beard and his real body. Would he get used to it if he lived in it long enough?
get accustomed to his breasts, the way he'd gotten accustomed to the arc reactor? He hadn't quite gotten adjusted to the arc reactor. Sometimes, the sight of it still made him catch his breath. But that was just because it was associated with a traumatic experience, not because it was an alien growth on his body that he didn't ask for and didn't want. It wasn't even like he disliked the body. Given the chance, he'd happily put on a girl body for fun. It was really pretty darn awesome. But he wanted to keep it just about as much as he wanted to spend his whole life at some vacation resort. It wasn't real life. It wasn't home. Well, I... Pepper was looking at him with sympathy in her big green eyes. For the first time since this started, she didn't look angry with him. He must look like hell. Would you want to stay a woman? I don't see I have much choice, he snapped, and Pepper shook her head. People have sex changes, Tony, without the aid of advanced physics. You're already legally a man, and while we'd have to talk to your lawyers, the fact that you've been living a man all your life and only became a woman due to a freak accident should speed up a lot of the proceedings in getting you. She waved her hands vaguely and settled for, well, you know. So just multiple surgeries to look forward to? Said Tony. If you want your body changed, yes, some. I don't know much about the procedures. I can look into it for you. I suppose so. If you want to keep living as a woman, it's more complex. We'll have to prove you're really Anthony Edward Stark. Reed's testimony will help, right? And then you'll have to live as a woman for a while, I suppose. And then we can make the legal changes. Stark Industries' non-discrimination policy covers gender identity issues, so I know HR will have some stuff on that kind of thing. I can have a look at it. You make it sound easy. He picked at an imaginary scratch on his gleaming desk, and Pepper frowned at him. You're in a pretty unique position. You've been trapped in a strange body by a lab accident. No one's going to be quite sure how to react. And being a billionaire helps, with pretty much everything. Yeah. And sex reassignment procedures aren't easy. I really don't want surgery, said Tony quietly, and he put a hand up to feel the shape of the arc reactor under his shirt. Recalled lying under the table under all those lights while his chest lay open. Pepper, I want my dick back. I want my face back. Tony. She got up and came around the desk and crouched down beside the chair and put her arms around him. He leaned over and hid his face in her neck. I'm sorry. It's all right for a change, he said in a wobbly voice he was going to blame the hormones on again. But I can't live like this. I'm sorry, she said again, and Tony realized miserably he might have to live like this.